Hello and welcome to the Fortune and Freedom podcast, where Nigel Farage and Nikolai Hubble give you a unique take on what's really going on in the world of finance, investing, and politics. We hope you sit back and enjoy this episode.
Last October, Nigel Farage and I penned a report for the Flea Street Letter, which analysed whether there was going to be a defence spending boom in Western countries. One angle we didn't investigate at the time was the widespread failure of weapon systems in Ukraine, but also in the Houthis in Yemen. And it seems to me that we should pick up this story from there. So Nigel, if there is going to be some sort of consensus emerging here that Western weapon systems are failing in Ukraine and in Yemen, what does that mean? Is there going to be an innovation boom, an investment boom, a military spending boom? And is this something investors can take advantage of?
Well, of course, the truth of it is that you never know whether your weapons work until they're actually tested in battle conditions. I mean, it sounds awfully cynical, but I'm afraid it really is true. I mean, we learned some lessons back in the Falklands War about our ships and some of their deficiencies. We'd never have learned that if we hadn't been engaged in that conflict. Look, I think, you know, the general point that we've made is that defense spending is going to rise. Already in Central and Eastern Europe, we're seeing governments spending quite a lot of money, 3%, etc., on defense. We're spending 2%, which is actually less than we were spending when the Labour government were last in power, which is interesting. I think, number one, if the kit doesn't work, it's back to the drawing board and it's more investment. I think that's quite simple, and that just has to happen. But I think, number two, the key to all of this is Trump, because if Trump wins the election, I mean, not only did he spend a lot of money on US defense, but his shout out to his fellow delinquent NATO members couldn't really be much clearer, could it? Pay up, or you know what? Whatever happens to you is your own fault. Now, you know, the truth of it is that's him using his own language as a negotiating position. He, you know, he is 100% behind NATO, but he's going to kick him up the backside until Germany and the others start spending more. So I do think that in political terms, a Trump victory will see a lot more money spent on Western defense. I really, really do.
There was that iconic moment at the UN, I think it was, when Trump warned about when it ended up happening, and he was laughed at when he warned that Germany was reliant on Russian energy and what the consequences would be. But what strikes me now is the news is getting quite specific about which particular weapon systems are failing in Ukraine and Yemen. You had stories about the drones that were captured by the Yemenis, which is just extraordinary. You've got these German tanks that are not operating and not being delivered because they're not operational. You've got jamming issues with American missile systems and other weapons that the Russians are, you know, basically able to target them and prevent them from reaching their intended targets. So there seems to be quite a big revolution in terms of what we would need to spend money on if they were going to convince us that this was actually credible spending. And this isn't just a matter of how many artillery shells. We're going to have to come up with something new and good. And supposedly that's going to take a huge amount of time because these defense companies, they don't invest in new products and the ability to manufacture those new products unless they get some pretty big long-term contracts. So we're talking here about all three stages of that, right? The innovation side, the investment side in production, but then also the follow-up spending. So all of this could amount to something extremely large if we're right.
Yeah, I mean, all the defense manufacturers say the same thing. You know, unless you can give us guarantees that you want us to produce a lot of artillery shells for the next 5 years, as opposed to for the next 6 months, why on earth should we gear up and make massive capital investment? Because actually it could be a massive loss for us. So yes, they do need government commitments. There's no question about it. It just can't work the other way. But I think in terms of the equipment, I mean, there's no war we've ever been involved in where we haven't, after a short period of time, said our kit is blooming hopeless. You know, you look at the tanks we had at the start of World War II, hopeless. It wasn't until we developed them and got new models that we had even half a chance. I mean, Normandy wouldn't have happened if we hadn't changed the tanks we had in 1940. So this is actually what's happening. It's easy to say, oh, isn't it a disaster? You know, half our kit doesn't work. Actually, this is normal. This is actually what happens. It is the general pattern. I mean, look, Labour are going to win the election in this country. Let's be, I mean, this is over. It's over. Forget it. You know, a lot of those voters who voted Conservative for the first time were totally betrayed on immigration, on the Brexit deal not being done as they wanted. You know, it doesn't matter what Slippery Sunak says, they are not voting Conservative. So we're going to get a Labour government. Interestingly, I think one of the areas that Labour will be best is defence. I think John Healey, who is their frontbench spokesman on defence, actually is far better than Grant Shapps and the Conservatives. They've said some pretty strong, solid things. There's a bit of knee-jerk away from Corbyn, who I think would have, you know, closed the army down if he had the choice. So I do actually think, I mean, okay, we're running massive budget deficits and all the rest of it, but I don't think in defence terms we should worry about a Labour government getting in. We might actually find they're better than the Conservatives. But I do go back to my point that, Trump is the absolute key. Even without Trump, defence spending in Europe is going to rise. It has to. You know, Putin, as many see it, knocking at the door, China, the Middle East, you name it. But I think with Trump, we could get quite a big increase in defence spending.
And the London stock market has a lot of opportunities for investors. Indeed, the British defence sector is quite big relative to a lot of other countries, including in the high-tech areas. So do you think there's a lot of opportunities here?
I do, and those stocks have been performing pretty well already. But if our analysis from last October is even half right, which we're sort of saying today, yeah, we still believe that it really is, then they may well have, you know, they may well, I mean, barring a market crash, they may well have a lot further to go.
And then the last question is a good one for you from your political side. What spending is given up if defence spending booms, right? Because you can't do everything, especially with higher interest rates and Bank of England trying to slow down inflation. There's got to be some sort of give in the budget, presumably. Where do you think Labour would...
I mean, look, there is more nonsense being talked about economics in this general election than I've ever heard in my life. You know, if we cut that, we can pay for that. As if we're running a balanced book, we're not. The massive elephant in the room, and it's massive, is we're still running a big budget deficit. We have an accumulated national debt of 2.7 trillion. Even the interest debt repayments are nearly 100 billion a year, which is double the size of the defence budget. So Nick, I don't know the answer. I literally do not know what Labour's plans are. Basically, they're pretty similar to the Conservatives. They will be told by the OBR what they can and can't do. I would expect little change, other than the one prediction I'll make is we will go on having substantial budget deficits. Of that, I have no doubt whatsoever. And at some point, I don't know when, but at some point, we're going to have to face up to the brutal truth that unless we get genuine growth in the UK economy, then we may have to see genuine austerity at some point in the next 5 to 10 years.
Let's finish on a Friday funny then, Nigel. Tell me about your gender identity, your sexual preference, and I think it was your racial background. Or
So I did my first question time in 2000. And of course, it was the big show of the week, you know, Robin Day historically, but David Dimb would be doing it for a quarter of a century. And it was the one show that everybody in politics wanted to be on. And I guess it's a show that I must have done quite well on because they kept inviting me back. And in fact, I've done 36 question times, which I think puts me in the all-time top 10 or something like that. I haven't done it for 5 years, but they've invited me on. And, you know, I have to fill in name, email, telephone number in case of problem. And then there was a box I had to tick. You know, can we use your data? Please check the terms in point 13. Point 13. Yes, this was a diversity questionnaire asking me about my sexual choices, ethnic origins. I just couldn't Adam and Eve it. So I've written a jolly great big no with an exclamation mark on it. Just shows you though, doesn't it? Just shows you though, this diversity and inclusion agenda has gone right through the corporate world. And it's pretty much what I was battling last year in the fight with Coutts, because that's what it was actually all about. We can't have this chap. You know, he doesn't fit in with the way that we see things today. So, frankly, if the production company don't like me making that public, well, you know what? I couldn't care less.